anyway, we're glad you're here now so very much, and we look forward to our study together. The last song that we sang had something to do with one of the parables of Jesus, as it had to do with sowing the seed of the kingdom. I'd like to do the same thing this morning in looking at one of the parables of Jesus. If you'll turn to Matthew 25, we'll begin looking at some of these and recognize the parable of the talents as has been given by the Lord. Matthew 25 starts off with the parable of the virgins, the 10 virgins who were unprepared when the Lord came back. And we would say that that parable was teaching the principle of being unprepared. The one that follows that in the next few verses, beginning of verse 14, has to do with being productive in the kingdom of Christ. Get very personal with this as we look at the scriptures and recognize that each of us is somewhat under the scrutiny of the Lord's eyes as to whether or not we're really being as productive as we ought to be. I want to read this with you, beginning of verse 14. I'd like to ask you to follow along. In verse 14, "For the kingdom of heaven is like a man traveling to a far country who called his own servants and delivered his goods to them. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1. To each according to his own ability, and immediately he went on a journey. Then he who had received the 5 talents went and traded with them and made another 5 talents. Likewise, he who had received the 2 gained 2 more also. But he who had received 1 went and dug in the ground and hid his Lord's money. After a long time, the Lord of those servants came and settled accounts with them. So he had received 5 talents, came and brought 5 other talents, saying, 'Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Look, I have gained 5 more talents besides them.' The Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You were faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.' He also had received 2 talents, came and said, 'Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents, and look, I've gained 2 more talents beside them.' His Lord said to him, 'Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord.' Then he who had received the 1 talent came and said, 'Lord, I knew you were a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not scattered seed. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the ground. Look, there you have what is yours.' But his Lord answered and said to him, 'You wicked and lazy servant, you knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I have not gathered seed. So you ought to have deposited my money with the bankers, and at my coming I would receive back my own with interest. Therefore take the talent from him and give it to him who had 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given. He will have abundance, but from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Cast the unprofitable servant into the outer darkness. There will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." There's so many things to learn from that parable, it's sort of hard to recognize. And we want to recognize the fact that Jesus taught often in parables. This is a woodcut from many years ago on the parable of the talent, where the talents are being given. And then the next one is the servant who is hiding his talent. So these are not really important, except that it brings home visually what the parable was talking about. And so again, it's talking about the parable of the talents and how they came back to receive these goods. And I've got to move up almost. I was surprised when I began to read about talents, about how much they really are worth. I understood that a talent is a portion of money in some kind of precious metal like gold or silver. I want to read this with you. When you realize how much money was involved, you'll be sort of shocked. When used as a measure of money, it refers to a talent weight of gold and or silver. The gold talent is reported as weighing roughly the same as a person, or perhaps 50 kilograms or 110 pounds. I don't know. That would be a mighty small person. I don't think many of us in this room weigh 110 pounds. But that's what the price would be. In February 2016, the international price of gold was about $1,190 per ounce, One gram cost about $1.25 million. Similarly, in February 2016, the price of silver was about $15 per ounce, about 50 cents per gram. A 33-kilogram silver talent would be worth about $16,500. And I really was shocked when I realized that's how much it was. Then the application, thus when we read the King Eleutes of Egypt paid Gaius Julius Caesar the sum of 6,000 talents of gold to grant him the status of a friend and ally of the Roman people. This amount would be worth about $7.5 billion today. These estimates are only rough values because they're based on modern estimates. A talent equal 6,000 denarii. One denarius was a day's wage. And so one talent would equal about 20 years of labor for a servant. And again, the talent was certainly more important. Your talent is better than that. And I really was sort of shocked to realize how much each one was given from the goods. And I want to emphasize that the goods that the Lord has left for us is more important than that, because we're dealing with the kingdom of heaven, we're dealing with souls. What is a man profit if he gain the whole world and lose his own soul? So we're in the process of finding people's souls and trying to get them to be faithful to the Lord. Well, of course, a parable, Matthew 13, Jesus taught many things in parables, and his disciples asked him, "Why do you teach in parables?" A parable is a figure of speech, an extended metaphor, a story using common actions or circumstances designed to illustrate a spiritual truth, a principle, or a moral lesson. The word parable comes from the Greek word parabole, which means to place beside or side by side for the purpose of comparison. A parable can usually be identified by the use of the word like. The kingdom of heaven is like unto. This was the method of teaching Jesus used most often, and what we usually hear is an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And it's very difficult, if you've never tried, to write a parable. Jesus rolled them off so many times, and all of them had a great deal of meaning for us to consider. And so we're looking this time at the parable of the talents, and we need to recognize what this is talking about. When you're looking at the parable itself, a man travels to a far country, leaving his goods to his servants, to each according to his ability. Of course, he's talking about Jesus in the parable, talking about himself. And he's going on a long journey, and this happened when Jesus ascended back into heaven, and will end when he comes again. So all these theories about this thousand-year reign of Jesus on earth is not true. There's not going to be a thousand-year reign on earth. Jesus is going to remain in heaven until he comes back again at the judgment day, and then he'll call each one to give an account. But notice that each one was according to his ability. We don't all act the same. We don't have the same abilities, and we have to recognize that. Not everybody can be a song leader. Not everybody can be a preacher. Not everybody can be what others might be. But nevertheless, we recognize that, and I would affirm this, that everybody has a talent. Everybody has an ability of some kind. Well, two servants doubled the talents, and one hid his talent. He said he was afraid. And the master returns and makes a reckoning. So I've got to give an account for what I've done in my life. And brethren and friends, you have the same responsibility. Jesus is coming back again. And he's going to require of us. The book tells us that books are going to be open, and the works that we've done are going to be there, and we have to give an account for all that we've done in this life. Paul talked to Corinthians about that. And so the time is coming when my life is going to be examined, and your life is going to be examined. And that's worthy of our consideration this morning, because it's important. So to the five and the two talents, the Lord said, "Well done, good and faithful. They used their talents well. Enter into the joy of your Lord." Lord. And so they pass the judgment. They're going to heaven. Now, this is not saying salvation by works alone. But we do have abilities and talents that God expects us to use. And the book of James talks about the fact that faith without works is dead. And we have to show our faith by our works. So I'm not saying that if you do certain things in this life that you'll go to heaven because you work so hard. I don't believe that for a moment. But nevertheless, our faith and works are shown together. And that's what these two people did in that. The one talent man said, the Lord said to him, "You're wicked and lazy. I was afraid." He said, "You ought to have deposited my money with the bankers." Now, they had people that sat in public on benches that were the bankers. And he said, "You could have taken that money to the bankers, which would have been less labor than digging and hiding it." And so he should have gone to the bankers, and then when the Lord came back, he would have had interest. So the idea is that there's a system or a way in which every one of us can use our talents. And we want to get down personal about this, because the one talent man that hid his talent was called lazy and slothful and cast him into outer darkness. Again, this brings up the vision of the final judgment. So, what are my talents? And that gets down to personal things with us. If you understand the parable of the talents, the Lord said that each one was given something to his own ability. So we don't all have the same talents, and we understand that. But the idea here is in 1 Corinthians 12, even the spiritual gifts of the first century, there was no room for jealousy or laziness. And I want to go to 1 Corinthians 12 and just read a little bit of that, because it has to do with spiritual gifts. Now, that was a different kind of gift, I understand, than what was given in the parable. But nevertheless, we have these gifts. And 1 Corinthians 11, when Paul wrote the Corinthian church as an apostle, he had laid hands on the members and given them some particular talents. And there were nine of them in 1 Corinthians chapter 11. And these nine gifts were given according to each one had an ability. So beginning in verse 1 of 1 Corinthians 11, Paul said, "Imitate me just as I imitate Christ. Now I praise you, brethren, that you remember me in all things and keep the traditions just as I delivered them to you." Then he talks about the covering. And as he gets down to, I'm in chapter 11. I should be in chapter 12. And you didn't sound right. Now, concerning spiritual gifts, that's what verse 1 says. "I do not want you to be ignorant." So it said down in verse 4, "There are diversities of gifts, but of the same Spirit. There are differences of ministries, but the same Lord. There are diversities of activity, the same God who works all in all." So these were spiritual gifts in the early church, and Paul could lay his hands on someone and impart to that person one of nine different gifts, like speaking in tongues and prophesying and working miracles, that would prove the validity of the preaching of the gospel. And you get down to verse 14 in that chapter, and you see that some were jealous about the other talents. Verse 14, "For in fact the body is not one member, but many. If the foot should say, 'Because I am not a hand, I am not of the body,' is it therefore not of the body? And if the ear should say, 'Because I am not an eye, I am not of the body,' is it therefore not of the body? If the whole body were an eye, where would be the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where would be the smelling?" So he talks about the fact that each of them have gifts according to their ability, and there's not to be any jealousy. And the jealousy in 1 Corinthians was the fact that speaking in foreign languages, the tongues, and they were foreign languages, gave some a sense of superiority over others who couldn't talk in those tongues. On the other hand, prophesying was more beneficial to the church, and people did not count prophesying as being equal to the speaking in tongues because it gave them this sense of superiority. He was reminding them that all of this had to do with building up the body of Christ. And that's what we understand now with the things that we're looking at here. In Romans 12, the apostle also talks about gifts that are given. And it gets more down to primarily perhaps what we would have today. Begin in Romans 12 and verse 5. So we being many are one body in Christ and individually members of one another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, let us prophesy in proportion to our faith. Our ministry, let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches in teaching. He who exhorts in exhortation. He who gives with liberality. He who leads with diligence. He who shows mercy with cheerfulness. So again, he gets down to the kind of gifts that are going to make the church complete. Now, we need to be complete in that sense, that each one of us has a talent, and we need to be able to find that talent. The problem is that many people, according to the parable of the talents, are content to be lazy and not to really do anything. Sometimes in jest, perhaps, we call them pew warmers. But nevertheless, how do I find out what I can do? And I'd like for each one of you to consider this. How do you find out what you can do for the cause of Christ? This is one of the most important things that you'll ever think about, because it has to do with eternity. Not only do you work for the cause of Christ here, but you're building up a record of serving the Lord through your faith and works. And there needs to be an eagerness to see what I can do. To do what I can do for the cause of Christ. Well, sometimes by trial and error, be willing to try to locate your ability. And here's where many people fall down, because they never really try. Let's say, for example, teaching a class. If you have never taught a class, you say, well, how would I know whether or not I can do that? Well, go into a class where a teacher is teaching and ask to observe. Then ask to help. And before long, you might be surprised that you would be teaching that class. And if you never try, you don't know whether you're going to be able to do that or not. But through the years, I've witnessed many, many people willing to try and advance in their knowledge, advance in their abilities. I remember, like singing, R.J. Stevens, who's passed away now, was one of the most outstanding singers of our generation. He had a talent that was given him. He had an ear for music that I don't have. But he told me that he had to learn how to use that talent. He said they had a dairy, and he'd have to go out early in the morning and milk cows. And said, while I was milking, I would learn my do-re-mi's. I'd practice my pitch. And he really became a wonderful teacher. He taught many people how to lead singing. He taught singing schools. There was a singing school at a college up in Oklahoma City. And he was able to instruct a lot of people and inspire brethren to sing out. And that was one way that he tried. Just an example like that. Not only that, but through the counsel of others, they might be more objective. You might ask someone, what can I do? I want to do something. I don't want just to be warming a pew. I want to be active in the cause of Christ. And I remember one preacher saying that he had trouble, as I do, in getting Bible studies. But one of the members had this talent of asking people, would you like to have a Bible study? And the preacher said that this man set up more Bible studies for him than anybody else had ever done. He had a talent of talking to people and setting up Bible studies. That might be yours. It might be that you could be really interested in setting up Bible studies with your neighbors, with your family, with your friends. And where I might not know them, I'm very willing to come and have a class with them and study the Bible. And so somebody else could look at you and be more objective about maybe what you could do. Some people just shouldn't preach, for example. I knew a man out in North Carolina who had a grocery store, and he made his living selling groceries. groceries. But he gave it all up. He sold his store and began preaching, and he never should have. Quite frankly, he was not a preacher. He bored brethren, bored the visitors. He just wasn't a gospel preacher. And somebody should have been able to tell him that. I was too much of a coward. I didn't do that. But people can be more objective about that and see what maybe I can do. Then we understand by imitation, like I said about the teachers. If you think you might want to teach a class, you might get some class material to teach and see how you would fill out the forms and do the Bible answers. That would be one way. Or go and sit in a class where somebody's teaching a class and you figure out, I can do that. I can do that too. And I want to do that. And then public prayer. Not everybody feels comfortable praying a public prayer. But what you need to do is do it at home. Do it out loud when you pray. Until you get comfortable with the sound of your voice. I know that when you're in front of a crowd and you hear the sound of your voice, it's sort of scary sometimes. But if you would pray out loud at home and get used to the sound of your voice, notice what others do when they lead public prayer. And then you might decide, yes, I want to lead prayer. I've known men who were afraid to wait on the table. But now, you know, if you just look at what brethren do when they wait on the table, it doesn't take a college professor to serve the Lord's table. And if you want to do something, watch what others are doing and say, I can do that. Maybe that's what my talent is. I can do that. Then volunteer and do what you can. And about teaching, and then again, being observant of what other people do. And that goes for the ladies too, who teach class and do those kinds of things. For example, we have a family each month take care of the Lord's table. Many of you will come in and the Lord's table is fixed. It's fixed. And you never participate in that. What an honor it is when someone asked me to serve the bread, as I did this morning. You think about serving the table for the Lord's body and the fruit of the vine for His blood. And that's an honor. And if you've never done that, maybe that's something you can do. That you can say, I want to serve the Lord's table. And that will help as well. So observe another example. Brother Bill Moore over at Woodmont is very ill right now. And he's in a nursing facility and very ill. But when I was at Woodmont preaching, Brother Moore was a member there. And when he came into the building, nobody had to ask him. He'd look around and just see what needed to be done. If a bulb needed to be changed, he'd get a ladder and change the bulb. He left for a while and went to another congregation, then came back. And when he came back, every one of the exit signs, all the bulbs were burnt out. Nobody had noticed it. But when he came in the first time, when he came back, he got a ladder and started changing the bulbs. Just because he wanted to do something. He wanted to do something. And doing the Lord's table, we pay someone to clean the building because it got to the fact we didn't have anybody healthy enough to come in on a regular basis and clean the building. But there's a lot of things to be done around the building. And if you're observant, you might notice some things on the floor that need to be picked up. I'm talking about simple, everyday things that make the cause of Christ go smoothly. And each of us can look out and watch that. I've noticed Brother Powers, when he gets out of his car, if there's paper or bottles or something on the yard, he'll go pick them up and put them in the trash. And that doesn't say a lot, but what it says is he's contributing that part to making everything look orderly for the cause of Christ. And so those are the things that many times people pass by. Then by repetition, try it again and again and again. Now be objective enough that if you can't do it, don't do it. But if you really want to do something, you find something that you'll try to do, and you'll try to do it again, and you'll try to do it again, because you just don't want to be idle. I don't want to be the man that buried his talent. And I want you to know, when I first started preaching, I was scared as anybody could be. I went out into the pasture and preached at a stump for quite a while. Had to hear the sound of my voice. Then my grandmother was not a Christian. And she lived in a little house that my daddy had prepared for her next door to us. So I went over to my grandmother, I thought rather slyly, and I was going to let her hear my sermon. I was trying to convert her. And she listened 2 or 3 weeks very carefully. And then she said, "Now, young man, I know what you're trying to do. You're trying to convert me, and you're not going to." And I didn't. But I had that experience, and I kept after it, and I kept after it. And so this is what it takes to be a Christian. Like Churchill said during World War II, never, never, never give up. And Churchill was the bulldog of the English nation that put together the resistance for the Germans that were marching in to England. And he succeeded because he never thought about quitting. And we have members that have quit us. Not that they've gone to a better place, they just quit. And here's where we need to work out on that too. If you know who they are, send them a card. They're not our enemies. They're our fallen away brethren, and we need to get them back into the harness. And so send them a card. Some are very good about that. They send cards. They reach out to people by phone or something like that. There was a lady in North Carolina. She was an elder's wife. And I'd be out in the neighborhood visiting the sick members and various things, and Sister Seaton would have been there before me. She always brought something for them to eat, or she did some housework, or she did what she could to help take them to the doctor, or just whatever. And she never told anybody. I wouldn't have known it had I not been out behind her somewhere, but she was always busy. And she said to me one day, "I'm so afraid I'm not doing enough to get to heaven." And she just had such a desire to work for the cause of Christ. Now, do you have that desire? Are you content just to sit and do nothing, not even be faithful? But would you have this fire inside? I need to be a faithful Christian. I know the judgment is coming, and I've buried my talents. Let me ask you to consider that very carefully. Then sometimes by training, we have a number of congregations that are very serious about that, in which they're training our young preachers. Justin Mons, who's been here, and Jeremiah Cox, who has been here in meetings, they went to the preacher training school at the 84th Street Church of Christ in Oklahoma City. And they really put them through the paces. Well, I think in about a week and a half or 2 weeks, they're going to have another preacher training course. And young men are invited to come, and it's free. And the housing is free. And they give you books and things like that. But they're ready to help train. And so there can be congregational teaching. Other preachers can help, and elders can help. But there has to be something inside each of us. That is that spark, that desire, that I want to be a Christian. I want to be of service. I want to find my place in the kingdom of heaven. And I'm not going to bury my talent. Nothing else, give it to the bankers, whatever that might mean to you. Don't just let it lay idle. Now, I know this gets rather personal. I know this is something that some of you might say, "Well, he's preaching to me." Yeah. Yeah, I am. Every one of us needs to understand this, because this is what it means to be a Christian and a servant. But there's a word in the Bible that is used sometimes, the word steward. And that's what these men were in the parable. They were stewards of their master's talents. And they used, two of them used them wisely, and one did not. I don't want to be that one. I'm well aware there are preachers more capable than I am. I'm not deluded about myself. I tell people that I'm the one talent man, walking and working and peddling as hard as I can peddle. I want to at least do something in the cause of Christ. And if you could have that desire in you and act on it, that I want to be a member of a congregation, I want to serve in some capacity, I'm going to learn to lead in prayer, I'm going to learn to wait on the table, I'm going to learn to do something. And you'll do it. So that's my lesson. This is out of the parable of the talents. And as we think about that, it's real. The Lord gave that for a reason. And the reason is because He wants every one of us to be a steward of His abilities and talents. If you're present this morning and if my message gets through to you and you want to place membership with us, we would love to have you do that. Come forward, and if you've not been faithful, we'll pray with you and for you to forgive your inactivity and set you forward on the course of service to Jesus Christ our Lord. If you haven't been baptized for the remission of your sins, we'll find a spot to do that, as we've always done, and baptize you into Christ for the remission of your sins. As you look into your own heart, as I look into mine, we ask you to think and act for the cause of Christ. Will you come while we stand together, while we sing?